listeners. This is Jenny Vrentis. I'm here with Connor Orr for this week's edition of the Weekside Podcast. We decided to record our intro after the 4 p.m. trade deadline, anticipating some hot moves. There was a lot of chatter all day long. Jamal Adams, Le'Veon Bell, Trent Williams. In the end, the NFL trade deadline was a bit of a dud at the in the final hours. There was only one trade on Tuesday, Aqib Talib from the Rams to the Dolphins. We'll get into that move a little bit later. But, you know, there had been more moves, I guess, in the past week. But in terms of the actual deadline itself, Connor, a little bit of a dud.
Do you know what today reminded me of when I was in high school? This movie called Hostel came out. Do you remember Hostel?
I don't, Connor. It's a movie.
Okay.
It's not my area of expertise.
I forgot about this. So Hostel was a movie, a horror movie that was not directed by, but produced by Quentin Tarantino. And it was supposed to redefine horror, right?
Okay.
It was supposed to redefine gruesome. And it was like, people shouldn't even come and see this movie. It's going to be so bad. And my friends and I were standing in line and we're like, my God, we're about to see something today that is going to change the way that we view everything. And it was horrible, right? It was just an hour and a half of bad, it wasn't even worth the popcorn that we paid to get in there. And so I felt like that was a little bit like this trade deadline. Everything else was, you know, Jalen Ramsey. We should have been paying attention then because that was the fun stuff.
Right.
There was no show, right?
Right. Connor, I'm not a movie person, but that sounds like a perfect analogy for describing today. Well done in pulling that one out of the memory bank. And yeah, we'll dive in a little bit to some of the other storylines, but the anticipated opening where we were going to break down this blockbuster move that would change the direction of one franchise, hopefully push them to the Super Bowl, signal an extreme rebuild for another team, just didn't happen today.
I know. Like, what are these guys doing? I saw a tweet from Mike Kliss, who covers the Broncos, that said the only team that reached out for Chris Harris offered less than what they were going to get back from a compensatory selection. Like, wake up, GMs. Come on. Let's get active here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, not the NBA yet, I guess, is the moral of the story. So,
womp, womp.
All right. Well, we'll move on to the rest of the topics now because we got nothing else for you.
All right, on to the news here. Topic number one for this week, Leonard Williams was traded across town to the 2-6 Giants for a third and fifth round pick. The fifth round pick, I think, is coming in the following year's draft, not this upcoming one. Is this the front end of a new type of trade deadline strategy, do you think, Jenny, where teams almost buy an evaluation period on a free agency target, or is this simply wild nonsense?
I think in this case, it's hard to understand the Giants' motivations here. Mm-hmm. You can understand, yeah, like you said, cutting to the front of the free agent line and getting a jump start, building a relationship of a player that you would maybe want to sign in the spring. But mostly, generally, teams that do that, like, get them for half a year when they're making a run or a push. Like, mm-hmm. It's the same trade price as the Rams paid last year for Dante Fowler. And that made perfect sense, right? Because he was a player that would help them be in contention. So I think the Jets made a good deal here, but have a hard time understanding why the Giants made this move.
Yeah, I guess the reason that I thought about this was, you know, this is not the same sport, and obviously everything's very different, but the Mets did this year at the trade deadline. They got, like, the biggest pitcher in the market, and everyone's like, what's going on? You're out of the playoff race. And I was like, well, I wonder if there's some sort of intellectual underpinning to this. And then when the Giants did it, it keeps making less and less and less sense to me, because if you're Leonard Williams, it's like you're still going to hit free agency. You're still going to want to see all of your other options. And unless you're banking on the fact that he becomes so enamored with playing there and remaining in New York, I guess, and being a part of this team that he doesn't want to go anywhere else. I mean, maybe your plan is to try to sign him before the end of the season. I don't know. But unless that works, it seems like this is a very dangerous sort of tightrope they're walking here.
Yeah, especially with a player who underachieved for the Jets. You know, his arc is so interesting because when he was picked, everyone thought the Jets got a steal, that he slid, you know, a couple picks and they were able to get him, what, fifth overall? That was supposed to be like, wow, what a steal in that year's draft. And really never quite lived up to the billing, wasn't really a factor. A lot of games you'd be watching and you'd be wondering where Leonard Williams was. So Yeah, I think the Giants' direction right now is a little confusing. You know, obviously, they've faced a lot of criticism over the last couple of years about the way they're building their roster. And I think, you know, we've obviously discussed some of those moves. We, you know, liked some of them more than others, right? We thought, you know, hey, they really like Daniel Jones, and that, you know, could be a very good pick. And who knows at this point, it's still early. But I just think their overall direction is a little hard to understand, coupling that with weird coaching decisions. And it's just, times are bleak here in New York for football, Connor. It's really just not a great period of time.
So speaking of which, I'm thinking to myself, okay, they're 2-6. While Jenny is making your point, look up the Giants schedule, right? And maybe see if there's an obvious soft spot here that we missed when we were talking before the show. First of all, it gave me the San Francisco Giants schedule, which, like, these phones are listening to everything I say. And the one time I need it to apply that information directly, it doesn't. And it gives me a baseball schedule.
Use your geolocation.
Come on, Google. This is a football show. Yeah, Cowboys, Jets, Bears. I don't know. I mean, Cowboys, Jets, Bears, Packers, Eagles. This doesn't get any easier, and you already have 6 losses. I don't, you know, there isn't a run here that I'm missing, I guess, is it? Or a runway potential, I guess.
I don't see much runway potential for this team.
Yeah, I don't know. This is, there's 2 teams, I think, you know, the Giants being one of them, that just really puzzled me this trade deadline, I would say, you know, and we'll get into, you know, a little bit of that a little bit further on, but yeah, I don't know. It's, very strange. I don't know. On to a team that makes some sense.
All right. The next team makes a little more sense. Topic 2. The Dolphins continued their march to a draft day stockpile by acquiring an injured Aqib Talib and a 5th round pick from the Rams. Creating echoes of the Osweiler trade, it seems Miami is doing whatever they can to fatten their arsenal of picks. Right. So it seems like the Rams were itching to dump some salary. The Dolphins saw an opportunity to essentially purchase a draft pick. But you made another point about the potential of also a compensatory pick for Talib.
Yeah. So you're almost buying 2, right? I mean, not in a row, you know, and you would get it next year. But I think that makes some sense,
right? That was some smart insight, Connor, I thought. I mean, we talked a lot of times about the Dolphins' strategy this year. There's pros, there's cons, but moves like this are very smart, right? It show that they're unlike other teams, at least we know what their direction is this year, right? Like, whether or not that ends up working out for them in the end, there's a lot of different opinions on. But at least they've committed to a direction. We know where they're going. They're all in. They continue to stockpile picks. And this is just another example of that.
I love what they're doing, because not only are they accumulating assets for this next draft, but it seems like drafts beyond. And if you listen to some of the people who've kind of broken down the way that GMs treat picks, it seems that, you know, a pick in the moment is almost worth twice as much as a pick down the road. And so you're kind of building these assets for further down the road to say, like, I can trade it this time, I can trade it this time, just chips to be able to move up at another point in time. So I think it's really smart. And if you're Aqib Talib, I don't know, I sparked a little bit of a discussion in the office here. Mm-hmm. I think this is a rehab upgrade. Like, you're going to have the broken ribs. You're probably not going to see you at all this year anyway. Why not do it in Miami, you know, and just relax a little bit, get a nice little beach condo. But you said you'd rather rehab in LA.
Yeah, I think there are a couple flaws in your argument. First of all, you dropped the whole he can rehab in South Beach and, like, you know, rookie. Move there, Connor, because we all know that Dolphins are not in South Beach.
It's true.
Second, you know, there's beach in LA. I mean, the LA area. Now, if we're going to be technical about where teams are based, I would not say the Rams are in a desirable area of LA. They're an hour north of the city. So, you know, they're not, like, right on the beach. So, yes, you know, but easily accessible. I would take California beach over Florida beach.
How much further is Aqib Talib from the beach in California than Aqib Talib would be from South Beach when he's in Miami?
Oh, from South. Well, he's probably closer to the beach in general with the Dolphins.
Okay.
And probably about equivalent to South Beach as he, well, I don't know. I'm not exactly quite sure.
I think this says a lot about me, but when I used to, you know, we used to be beat writers and we used to be out at practice every day. I think I said to a lot of people that my dream would be to be a player on injured reserve. I mean, it just seems so great. But one of those things where they stash you, you know, because they don't want to lose you.
Right.
And you just, you get to go and you get to eat in the cafeteria every day and you get all the free sweatpants and all the great stuff and you don't have to do anything. And God, what a dream that would be for me.
You know? Or it seems like you would be very interested in being like a third string quarterback with a mild finger injury.
Oh my God. Yes. How do we create a job search alert for that on LinkedIn?
Glassdoor. Exactly. You can get some Glassdoor daily alerts.
If any team is interested, I mean, I'm not going to make any waves, league minimum, you know, and I can do a lot of other stuff. You know, I can help load the truck. I can Xerox a lot of stuff if your quality control coaches are busy. I can be a jack of all trades there.
I'm not sure your Xerox technique would be on point with the injured finger. Just saying.
That's a very fair point. Speaking of things that are very, very on point.
Nice.
Regardless, yeah. What a transition. Here we go. The Patriots are on the march to a historically great defense, despite the fact that we don't even know who's calling it. What do we make of this team? And is it possible that we're not talking enough about what Bill Belichick has done in Brian Flores' absence? And I will add to that in my season preview, I mentioned that I'm going to make an effort to not underrate any part of the Patriots at all this season because, as we remember, Bill Belichick kind of created out of nowhere this narrative in the middle of the season that we had all been saying horrible things about them all year.
Right.
And then I remember after the Super Bowl, Kyle Van Noy like pointing at everybody and saying, none of you believed in us. And I wanted to say, yes, I did. I did the whole time. So Kyle, I believe in you guys. And now we're talking about how you're better maybe than any other defense that's ever existed.
Okay, less than 8 points per game they're allowing.
Phenomenal.
7.6 points per game. This is my favorite statistic. So I did a story on Stephon Gilmore that is running in this week's magazine. And I checked with Pro Football Focus on their stats for what the success rate for quarterbacks targeting Stephon Gilmore is. This is my favorite statistic of the week. Opposing quarterbacks have a woeful 36.0 passer rating when throwing in Gilmore's direction. For context, if you spiked every throw into the dirt, that would result in a 39.6 rating. It's because of his interceptions, right?
Wow.
So it's worse to throw at Stephon Gilmore than to just spike every pass in the dirt. That is crazy to me. I mean, he's obviously having a phenomenal season. He's one of several players that make that system work. Obviously, he plays an important role because he asks Belichick every week for the hardest assignment, and they know that he'll handle it. But it's this beautiful concert of, you know, all these savvy veterans who make Belichick's play calls come to life, which brings us to the next point. Okay. So we sort of touched on it briefly in last week's podcast, but we had, before the podcast last week, a full-fledged conversation at Bread Street in the cafeteria at the SI offices.
Big shout out to Bread Street.
Big shout out to Bread Street, where they serve sandwiches, which most of you could probably surmise from the name, about how, you know, you've got Steve Belichick, Gerard Mayo. They're calling in the plays to the field, right? But who's actually making the calls? And I said to you, Connor, I'm like, I watched an entire preseason game. This was when the topic was hot. Who's making the calls for the defense? They were in Tennessee, and I just spent the whole game watching. And I would see Mayo and Steve Belichick alternating series where they'd be the ones radioing the plays in. But always Belichick was nearby. He was always much closer to them than he was, say, to Josh McDaniels when he's calling the offense. So I said to Orr last week, I mean, Belichick doesn't need a play sheet. I mean, he's always got that little piece of paper that he writes stuff down. But he's not me reading off a laminated play sheet at this point in his career. It's likely he's pulling the strings behind all of this. So then I'm watching the game on Sunday, which I had this Gilmore story running. So I'm making sure I watch every bit of the Patriots game. And of course, Gilmore did another fantastic job against Odell Beckham. And Tony Romo late in the game goes down the exact same rabbit hole that we did. They even showed the split screen of all three of them on the sidelines. And then Romo goes, Bill doesn't even need a play sheet. And I was like, were they listening in at Bread Street, Connor?
Is Jim Nance possibly a sandwich artist at Bread Street, and we just weren't even thinking about it.
But it's an interesting conversation because, you know, they had Matt Patricia and then they had Brian Flores, and, you know, in theory, the third change in the defensive play caller. But there hasn't been a drop off, and if anything, they've been even better. And I think it's fair to say that Belichick definitely has his fingerprints all over this defense. I think more than he did with Patricia and Flores. You know, I think, you know, Steve Belichick and Gerard Mayo are getting valuable experience. But it's hard to imagine that Bill would completely turn over that responsibility to them. And so, you know, when we talk about how good this defense is, I think it speaks to not only Belichick's ability last year to adjust to the new offensive styles that were exploding across the NFL, but to this year survive a second straight coordinator loss and be better than ever.
I can just see us now at the Super Bowl, you know, bouncing between Mayo's table and Steve Belichick's table and trying to decipher who's calling the plays. You know, I just had a vision of that right now. I wonder, though, do you think, and this is just conspiracy theory guy over here, do you think it's all ruse, right? Do you think they want us to think that there's essentially two or three defensive coordinators and that maybe you're preparing for one on one drive and you're preparing for one another guy on one drive and one guy blitzes more than the other guy and one guy likes to run zone defense more than the other guy? I don't know.
I think it's totally possible because we always see the way that the Patriots get into other opponents' brains. Maybe other teams are watching like we are with binoculars, who's holding the play sheet. But really, the person holding the play sheet is not actually holding the play sheet at all.
There is no play sheet.
There is no play
sheet.
That's
the prestige at the end of the trick. There is no play sheet. That's
no
like
play.
The time that I found out. Remember when it was like 4 or 5 years ago, it was super popular for teams to hold up the big poster boards with
yes.
the four pictures mm-hmm. on them.
Chip Kelly.
Yes. And I finally asked a coach, I was like, what does it mean? Like, you do it. What does this mean?
Mm-hmm.
He said, nothing, right? It's mm-hmm. It means nothing. I want another team to sit there and watch the play five times and look at the thing and think that they know the answer to it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was out at the Penn State spring game with my dad in April, and I noticed that there were two different staff members, and they were each making different hand signals on each play, and I was wondering if one was like a decoy. So it's interesting all of the lengths that people go to, but just, yeah, I mean, you know, there is no play sheet, Connor. I think we've cracked it.
We've
really cracked it. All right, on to the next topic here. The Bengals are moving on from Andy Dalton. And no, this is not a news item from 2012. The red rifle has been holstered in Cincinnati. Ugh, just perfection, Connor. Just perfection. In favor of rookie Ryan Finley, number 5 in your playbook. Is this an evaluation period, or is it simply the Bengals pocketing an anvil in order to speed their free fall to the bottom?
I told you that I was feeling
yes.
the writing on some of this,
yes.
and
This was the one.
I nailed that one.
You did nail that one.
I'm sorry. I just did.
That's pretty good. Well, they have to see what they have in Finley. What, fourth round pick?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they drafted him, there was a lot of like, ooh, maybe this is another option. But I think we wouldn't have seen him had the season not gone as horribly as it's gone. And so I do think now they're in evaluation mode. But we are setting up for this late season showdown between the Dolphins and Bengals, which could decide the top pick in the draft.
It's going to be epic.
That you should go to that game. That's like the toilet bowl. That's a real toilet bowl.
I know. I jumped the gun.
You jumped the gun a little bit, but it didn't, you know, at that point in time, you know, we hadn't yet moved the Bengals to 32 in the power rankings, Connor.
We didn't make our consensus decision.
We hadn't made our consensus decision yet. But once we moved, I feel that's really when the conversation shifted.
I do. I think that you, as usual, were out front of this. And now everybody knows to just slide the Bengals back one more spot on your power rankings.
Just to be clear, we don't actually think that we're setting any kind of conversation, but we do need to amuse ourselves during the exercise of the power rankings weekly.
100%. I will say that I do find it interesting that I was thinking, what is the equivalent of Andy Dalton in recent NFL history where it's almost been my friends where I used to work at NFL.com and their podcast, they used to call it the Dalton line, which was the divider between good and not good quarterbacks, right? And mm-hmm. Andy was just right in the middle. But he'd been in the middle for so long. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a starter there for a very, very long time. And I can't believe that it took until now for this decision to be made.
Yeah. Know? And it was once Zach Taylor comes in as a new coach and there's no more guaranteed money left on Dalton's contract, it's certainly set up for that. I mean, I thought it was possible that Taylor could have taken a quarterback this year, mm-hmm. but by the time they picked, perhaps there was, they picked number 11, I think, perhaps there was no one they liked, or maybe there was no one at all, or he wanted to have a year to assess Dalton. And, you know, then they get Finley in the fourth round and that's an option. And now they'll have a chance to see if there's anything there or not. But I think we felt like the Dalton era was probably winding down unless their pairing had some McVay Goff magic to it.
Were you suggesting that Taylor might be hoping that someone dropped some dimes?
Yeah, you know, I actually, in my mock draft, now that you mention it, I did have the Bengals taking Daniel Jones, Connor. Thanks for the little plug there.
Dimes. one more thing on this, just because I was listening to a podcast on it the other day and I thought it was really interesting. I think it was like the 2008 or 2012 Olympics, where there was the badminton tanking scandal. Did you ever hear about this?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the teams were just essentially letting the shuttlecock just fall on the floor because they wanted to lose to get a better draw in the winner's bracket of the mm-hmm. tournament. And I wonder if that's what the Dolphins-Bengals game is going to kind of end up being, you know, and how you avoid that, because we're setting up for a head-to-head showdown for the number one pick in the draft. It's fascinating.
It is a head-to-head showdown. But no one on that field is going to, no one on the field is going to be trying to lose,
right,
or want to lose. But I'm sure people upstairs will be rooting for things to go a certain way.
It's almost like you just keep taking away pieces, right?
Well, Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, interesting. I think you saw the frustration with Brian Flores bubble over on Monday night. You know, like, it just felt like in that moment, that reversal, and like, He every week wants to win. I mm-hmm. mean, you know, the organization's gone in a direction and they've chipped away talent and stockpiled for picks for the future. And, you know, they clearly have a plan. But every week that Brian Flores is out there, he wants to win.
Yeah, I feel for him.
I do. Yeah.
A little bit.
I definitely do.
You know what happened? I was like, lost. We, Jenny and I, keep our news topics on a text thread on our phone, and then sometimes you just like, yeah, I it's like the worst human reaction ever to just like float into Twitter for some reason really quickly, and you're like, oh, I gotta get back for the news topics, and then you fumble with your phone, and you know, I'd be a very bad student now. Like, I'm glad I missed almost all of social
media. Yeah, it would be harder
class.
To focus at this point in time with all for the sure. potential distractions.
Yeah. All right, so news topic number 5, the Browns were dressed down in a national game loss to the New England Patriots this Sunday, dropping them to 2-5. And after that game, Freddie Kitchens said that the game plan, which was to run the ball, was effective. What caused them to lose were too many turnovers. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Then Baker Mayfield said that the reason the team lost was because of a lack of accountability and discipline. Now, there is some subtext or context to that. I think we wrote about it in the Morning Huddle newsletter earlier this week. He said that Baker said that Freddie and I cannot keep an eye on everybody. So he's kind of looping his coach in and saying, you know, it's you and me here. They were both sort of on the same page there, but that was the first time that I listened to what they said and thought, boy, that's interesting. Especially Freddie Kitchens' need to say that we came here to run the ball and we did that, and the reason we lost is that people turned the football over.
Right. The game plan was good.
The game plan was good. Yeah.
Similar to Pat Shurmur last week, where he said the strategy was good,
yep, but
the execution wasn't. Another interesting comment post game was Odell Beckham Jr., who felt like he should have been tried more against Gilmore. So that also signaled a little bit of alarm bells in case, you know, maybe he hasn't seen the stat that we read earlier in the game, or earlier in the podcast, excuse me. But, you know, it's generally not wise to target Gelmeyer. Now, I will say, having watched exclusively those two players for the entire game, there were a couple times when I did think, okay, Beckham had a couple inches or a little bit of separation from Gelmeyer. But there's other stuff going on in the play. Who knows what Reed Baker is on? Who knows where the pressure's coming from? Who knows if by the time the ball got there, if that window would even still be there, which in the case of Gelmeyer, the answer is probably no, because even when he does let the receiver get a little bit of separation, he's excellent at closing before the ball arrives. So, but yes, I do think there's been a lot of little sprinklings here and there of some trouble amiss.
There's enough breadcrumbs there to
That's what I was going
There's enough
for.
Breadcrumbs there to almost form a loaf.
A loaf.
Right? We're getting towards loaf territory in Cleveland. And it's interesting, right? Because if we looked at the hiring cycle, that's the only job, the only new job, I think, Freddie Kitchens and Cliff Kingsbury, I thought that if things went south in a hurry, that they would change stream immediately. Because if you're the Browns, you have no other option. This team is built to win right now, save for your offensive line, which needs desperate help. But you can't bring him back, I think, if he shows that he's the kind of person who loses control of a big locker room like that.
Yeah, and I think yet again we have questions about the direction of the Browns organization, right? I mean, John Dorsey made a lot of moves, acquired what looked on paper to be a good roster, but I think all along you were sort of setting up this potentially, you know, oil and water. Maybe some personalities don't go together. Like, you don't exactly know all of the things that go into making a team work together, and you don't know if Freddie Kitchens is the right person to lead the team. And I think now you're in a tough spot because you make this decision after having given him the interim job. You decide to stick with him, and now do you make another change, you know, and have Mayfield going into his third season with a different head coach? I mean, and this is the cycle, right? This is why teams get stuck in these bad situations.
You'd be paying three head coaches, I think, then, right? Maybe you'd still be paying a little bit of Hugh as well.
I forget when his contract runs through, but it was 5 years, I think.
Yeah. I would say that the last thing on this that I have to say is that did you see the picture of Odell Beckham giving Tom Brady the goat-haired cleats?
I did.
And then there was Baker Mayfield side-eyeing the whole situation. He was caught looking down in sort of that meme of the guy who's looking at the other woman and the woman he's with is upset. Mm-hmm. That kind of face, right? And I got to say, I felt for him a little bit, you know?
Little bit of a dagger.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it's Brady, though, so it's not like, maybe it's not too much of a dagger.
Yeah, I don't know. But still, it's like one of those things where, for example, you know, I was, we've discussed this a little bit on the podcast.
Your dating prowess at an early age? Yes, go ahead. Keep going.
I play like recreational old person softball, right? In the whatever, the spring, into the summer. And, you know, I'm the kind of player that you need to put in the field where nobody's going to hit the ball, right? You know, I'm a minus defender. I'm a minus everything. I'm not really there to help the team win. However, you know, when you hear your own teammates talking about, wow, that the outfield, the center fielder on that team is so rangy. I mean, the things we could do with that guy. You know, you're just like, well, you know, I'm trying over here, you know? If you're Baker Mayfield, you're like, I'm trying. You know, I think if you put Tom Brady back there, they'd still be 2-5.
Yeah, I agree with the fact that it didn't feel quite right, right?
No.
Like, the whole idea of giving an opponent on another team cleats, like, yes, of course there's respect around the league, and of course it's Brady, and, you know, every player, most players around the league respect him, but that was weird to me, giving a player on another team goat cleats. It's a little bit strange. And you know what I was thinking, Connor? I was, why did Beckham ever sign the extension with the Giants. Why yeah. didn't he? I mean, I understand, of course, like never question a player wanting security in this brutal game. But, you know, it seems like he's always wanted to get into a better situation, right? So if that is, if your goal is to play with someone like Brady, then don't sign the deal and become a free agent.
Totally. That's a great point. You know, it's another thing too, is what is the fascination with goat hair cleats? They were goat hair cleats, right? Is that like a luxurious item in the fashion world? Like goat hair cleats? I've never heard of goat hair anything, is all I'm saying. I get that Brady is the goat.
Right. No, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I mean, there's calf hair things in the fashion. Like, I think I own a pair of calf hair shoes, but they're probably fake calf hair, but calf hair is like a thing.
People don't know this about me, but when we come into the office every morning to tape the podcast, we're in sort of a mall, like we're above a mall, right? And it's a very high-end mall.
Very right? high-end.
And so stores that
I
had never even heard of, right? Like one day, Jenny and I had a meeting downtown and I was improperly dressed for it and I ran down there to try to find a shirt and I was blown away. Like there was no chance I was affording any of this stuff, right?
Right.
But one of the bits that we kind of developed over time was like walking past Hermes.
Great job. Nailed it.
Called it Hermes for a long time.
Nailed it.
Very high end. Store. And so that's sort of the where it begins and ends with me in terms of high fashion.
Right. So you think that the security guard looks askance at you every time you walk past, like don't get too close to the store.
There are times when I walk in and then I just walk toward Hermes so he has to get up from his seat to block me from coming in to Hermes. But yeah, so then I would always like look up Hermes stuff online to find out what the big deal was. No goat hair on Hermes, so I don't know. I just didn't know if that was part of the deal there. But anyway.
Now it will become one, Connor.
Exactly. So, past the news, but we've got some big news coming up.
Huge.
We end the show on two kind of fun segments here. The first is called The Oracle, where I try to make a big prediction. And as you guys know, really been struggling lately. Really been struggling lately. But here's one that I can almost guarantee is going to come true, and that is a budding friendship between me and Gabe from State Farm.
This is a huge development.
God, how isn't like a sell this, right? I mean, this is a
partnership waiting to happen.
I tweeted a couple weeks ago when the Joker movie came out and everyone was talking about sort of the overplayed genre of dark origin stories for comic book characters. And I said, wow, I would love the dark origin story of Gabe from State Farm, right? 2 weeks later, he finds the tweet and he said, how do we pitch that, Connor? Dark Genesis, Gabe Gabriel. And he loved it.
Brilliant.
Gabe, I'm just so happy. Probably my favorite recurring commercial character now on my radar. Just so good.
So it was the Oracle that this is going to happen, that you're going to make this film?
I mean, the Oracle is that anything's on the table. Maybe lunch. Gabe and I might have lunch. Gabe and I might have drinks. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm following him now on Twitter, trying to kind of get him to follow me back. So maybe DMs are a possibility, you know? I don't know. I mean, I'm trying everything here, you know?
That's a big development, and we will be sure to keep our listeners posted.
truly a picture of the state of affairs in my life right now.
And lastly, we'll close out with the Redis consensus. So last week we talked to our listeners about being vorked.
Yes.
And this is a recurring figure in our fantasy football league.
Mm-hmm.
And after that happened, I received, you know, yet another insulting trade offer from the person in question, who then said that his goal was to help just give us content for our show, which...
We'll take it.
So I just
are you going to read the trade proposal?
Oh, no. I clicked no and the trade proposal went away. But I just did want to mention that when you've been insulted several times by this person in your league, and then turned out I was playing him. So I checked the score early in the day Sunday, and Connor, things aren't looking good. I mean, listen, I had one win going into this week. This was the toilet bowl in our league. We were the two teams at the bottom of the standings. And then, miraculously, a late afternoon surge from the 19 auto draft squad. I accidentally auto drafted this year. Tyrell Williams had a big day. George Kittle. I had the Jacksonville defense. Saquon Barkley. I beat the nemesis by one point.
Woo!
So I think we can all get behind a week where you vanquish that pest in your league.
Yes. I have the trade proposal, by the way. Do you want me to read
it? Oh, yes. Go for it.
So this is what, and I've accused him of this in the past, where I was like, do you ever think that I'm going to accept one of these? And he says, well, it's a conversation starter. If you were Dave Gettleman, or if you were Les Snead, would you call up like the Kansas City Chiefs and be like, yeah, three of my middling players for Patrick Mahomes, but let's just make it a conversation starter.
Just open
hang
a
up
dialogue.
The phone.
Right, right.
Anyway, here's the trade offer that you were... Oh, no. I'm going to get it back. Here's the trade offer that you were proposed. You have Saquon Barkley.
I have Saquon Barkley.
Who you wisely
auto-drafted
the first. Saquon Barkley for Juju Smith-Schuster, receiver without a quarterback, Melvin Gordon, and Philip Lindsay.
I mean...
It's horrible.
What is this offer? What is this offer?
And... like akin to the Giants, he's out of it. What is he trying to do?
Exactly.
What is he trying to do?
What is he trying to do is the bigger question here, Connor. So basically, got that hit reject, and a couple days later, beat him by 1 point, 99-98. It's too high-powered offenses going toe-to-toe, Connor.
Oh, well, on that note, we will let you know that the MMQB Weekside podcast is me, Connor Orr, and Jenny Vrentis. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help, but 5 stars only, just so you let the other people know where to find the show. It's also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever you listen to podcasts.